Hello, welcome to Dyslexia Explored. We are going to use this podcast to explore the idea of prototyping and how it can help children organize their ideas, get those ideas out of their head into the real world and do something with them. Because children can have so many ideas flowing like a blizzard into their mind and it can get in the way of life. And it can also get in the way of getting better ideas. Now, this episode is inspired by a man called Stan Gloss. He gave an article, an interview to understood.org, and I actually turned it into an explainer video with a mind map. And it stuck with me for a number of years now, and I want to share it with you because he shares some great insights. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the story of Stan Gloss, some of his experiences as a child and as an entrepreneur, and then pull out some of those experiences and thoughts and develop them a little bit, and then we'll go to the parents and ask, hear their comments, questions, and insights. So here goes. This is a quick overview of Stan Gloss and his dyslexia. So Stan Gloss was diagnosed with dyslexia at 9 years old, and that was in third grade when he was reading and learning to read. What was happening at school was the teachers were calling him stupid and lazy and that he should try harder. And he didn't get much help. But his mother found a chap called Dr. Charles Drake, who in those days, which was probably about 40 years ago, maybe longer, I'm not sure how old Stan Gloss is, diagnosed him with dyslexia. Now, one of the interesting things was he created some clever workarounds to get his work done at school. So he was very creative as a child. And what he did was he organized his friends, even at a young age, into study groups. And what they did was they ended up writing their own study guides. And as a result, what happened was he got through his work much faster because his friends were in effect doing the studying for him and that they could talk through the subjects instead of read through the subject. So he got three times as much work done, but he still only got a C. And he was a bit disappointed with us with that. But while he was at school, he actually was running a snow clearing business. For 11 years, he ran this business as a child. He started it when he was 9. And what happened was he would identify all the paths in the area that got very snowed up and never got cleared. And in the spring, he would go around and speak to every one of them and arrange a contract with them that he, as a child, would come and clear their drive. And in fact, he ended up getting so many of those contracts as a kid that he ended up hiring kids to do it for him, and he made some good money doing that. So he started to educate himself in business, and this is tied in with the whole prototyping thing, because in effect, he was prototyping running a business in real life when he got older, when he was a child. And so when it got to college time, he got turned down by every college because his SATs were too low. But his mother actually found a workaround for him. He ended up managing to go and work in a college, a graduate college, through a different track, and he got accepted and he worked in the college as well as studied in the college. Anyway, he ended up getting his degree because of this workaround, which is very common with dyslexic people. And he ended up becoming a teacher at Quinnipiac University, if I pronounced that right. And one of the things he did was sales of medical equipment because he was very good at talking, as so many dyslexic individuals are. They're often very good at sales. And he started a research company where they combined a computer system with the life sciences and they started a bio team, a company called BioTeam. And it was very successful. And that's what he's well known for. Now, Stan Gloss was asked what from the dyslexia helped him in his entrepreneurial journey. And there were three things he said that really helped him that I got out of this article. Number one was the spirit of innovation. And he really had to struggle a lot and struggle to survive in school, struggle to survive his confidence with his little snow clearing business and so on. These were all aspects that kind of forced him to innovate. The second thing he discovered from dyslexia, got from dyslexia, was discomfort. Now, one of the things he said was, as an entrepreneur, you need to learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And as an entrepreneur, your success chances are slim and failure is present all the time. And one of the things that you learn with dyslexia is learn how to fail a lot. And it started with reading for him, as with so many. And the third thing he said was learning to deal with failure. Now, a lot of people don't experience a huge amount of failure in comparison to a dyslexic child during school. And in school, they fail so many more times than others. And actually, he experienced a lifetime's worth of failure during school, and it trained him to be an entrepreneur for life, to deal with failure as it came along. Now, finally, in this article, and I'll post it in the show notes down below, he gave some advice which has really stuck with me as a parent and as an educator. And his advice was, what do you do with children with dyslexia? And he said he reckons it's very important to take their ideas seriously, and secondly, to prototype their ideas immediately, which encourages them to get started with their ideas rather than get stuck in their head. And look for those strengths that the child's got and praise their efforts. Now, I want to develop that idea of prototyping in this podcast. So that was Stan Gloss's kind of story in a nutshell. If you want to see the video that I created of that, we'll post that in the comments with the link below in the show notes. Let's talk about prototyping. And a lot of parents come to me and ask me, what do you do about your child's ideas? You know, they have so many ideas. You know, what do you do about them? And, you know, sometimes children can have so many ideas that, you know, it kind of fills your mind so much you can't go to sleep. You know, you really can't go to sleep. It's just, it's there. You've got to, there's a compulsion to do something with it. Somehow you feel a responsibility to the idea to do something with it. It feels like a gift to the child. And you could be dealing with a 5-year-old child, 7-year-old child, 16-year-old child, 25-year-old child. You're still dealing with children. They're not a child, but they are your child. And they will still come to you sometimes and say, I've got this idea, I don't know what to do about it. What do you do? Well, here's a simple idea. And the idea is prototype it as fast as possible, which basically means, and I've talked about this before in our parents' coffee times, but never actually recorded it for the podcast. So this is me summarizing all of that information for you guys and adding a bit more info. Prototyping can be as simple as getting a piece of paper out and sketching the idea down. It can be as simple as drawing a diagram with little annotations of what it could be. And so one of the simplest way you can do with a child is, often a child with dyslexia will be trying to explain their idea to you with words, and the words are insufficient. And so one of my bits of advice to you as a fellow parent and educator is, ask them to show you what they mean, not just tell you what they mean. So often the child will be so focused on the idea that they're like, Mum, it's like this and it's like that, and then there's this and then there's that and there's this over here and there's that over here, and they're all over the place. And you don't get it. It doesn't make sense. So the answer is, can you show me? And so you go to a whiteboard, or you pull out a napkin or a piece of paper, or you draw on a bit of wood or whatever. You draw it as fast as possible with whatever's to hand. Don't interrupt the stream of thought too much. Don't try and pull out the perfect scenario to draw out or whatever, just the nearest thing, and get them to show you. And they'll show you and they'll doodle it out. Now, what happens next is they go, I think, Mom, that this could be a really good Minecraft design. It could be a really good building design. It could be a design for leather, that they're making something out of leather. Maybe they're making something out of wood at school. Maybe they're making something out of Lego and things like that. So the next question you ask is, how could we spend 20 minutes to half an hour, 25 minutes, making this into something quickly? And you ask that question of them, is there a way we could make something like this really quickly in 25 minutes? Maybe you make it out of cardboard, maybe out of cereal boxes or some cardboard in a garage or something, or you make it out of Lego, or you go onto Minecraft and you build it out of Minecraft blocks. You find something that they're used to working with. It could be clay, it could be sand, you know, out in their sand pit, whatever material that you've got to hand. And you just kind of mock something up and they go, it's like this, Mum, it's like that, it's like this. And you've got sellotape and you stick it together and you draw things on it and you're like, oh, I get it. That's really interesting. And the interesting thing about this process is every creative person goes through what Brené Brown calls a shitty first draft. Okay, now excuse my language, but it's her language and it's quite appropriate, because the first draft is always messy. The first draft is always 90% rubbish and 10% useful stuff of any creative process. I mean, if you're, you know, looking at Ed Catmull's book, Creativity Inc., or how they did Pixar or whatever, this is always the pattern. And the key is to get through that first draft as quickly as possible. Now, the reason why you're doing it as a parent is not to create more projects for you to facilitate, believe it or not. The reason is for you to help them get it out of their head and bed it down into the ground of their mind, their subconscious mind. Let their subconscious mind just mull over it, dwell on it, rather than it floating around in their conscious mind, getting in the way of everything. If you're homeschooling or you're schooling or doing homework, all these ideas can get in the way of things. So what you've done is you've listened to your child. You've taken their idea seriously. You've asked them to show you what they mean on a bit of paper. Might only be 2 minutes, 5 minutes. You'll be amazed at how quickly they can show you the idea compared to telling you the idea. And it'll save you a ton of time. Then they've showed you the idea and you say to them, do you know what, how could you, you know, mock that up in 25 minutes? Would you like to do that? And they go, yeah, I'd love to do that. Maybe you don't do it with them. Maybe you just give them the idea to do the next step. It's like going up through the gears of being creative. You don't need to do it with them. You might just need to get them into gear, get them focused into that. And so you might suggest, why don't you go and build it out of your Lego? Why don't you go outside and make it out of sticks and so on? Why don't you go do X, Y, and Z? And they might go, oh, that's quite a good idea, Mum. I think I will. And they go out and they do it. And then you make an arrangement with them. I'll come out in 25 minutes and have a look. And you can tell me what you're meaning then. And so that's the deal. Maybe you set a timer on your phone, 25 minutes. And then you go out and you see the idea. Now, this is where the shitty first draft comes in. The beauty of a shitty first draft is that there is always something valuable in those ideas and you don't know what it is, nor does the child. The child will, of course, think everything is very important. Everything is super valuable. And we have to do everything in this idea right now, spend a fortune on it, spend all our time on it. It's super important. They'll probably spend the rest of their life as an entrepreneur doing the same thing until they get disciplined. And that's when the discipline of the creative process comes in, like Stan Gloss was saying. Because the moment they experience getting it out of themselves into a prototype, that sort of nervous energy gets discharged. And then the idea gets planted. It's like a seed in the soil. And you leave that seed of an idea, the stuff that's rubbish, composts down and feeds the idea, and the idea grows into another idea. It might even transform into something that doesn't even look like a seed, like a plant does. I was just telling the story of Jack and the Beanstalk today in Doodle Club. And so you throw out these beans into the ground and you see what grows. If anything grows, it might just germinate and die. But this might seed into another idea later on. But often it just needs the process of being left alone for a day or two or a week or a month until they go to their next idea. And all these different seeds germinate in the imagination and creativity of that child. And they can often become something quite special and significant later on in their life. It could be the beginning of something that highly motivates them. Now, one of the biggest sadnesses I see is, like yesterday, I met a teenager who was feeling unmotivated, and I see this a lot, and it so saddens me. And then I saw another child who was 12, 13, and she was hyper motivated, super motivated, because she had found tools before puberty had hit her. She had found ways to work with a dyslexic mind before the weight of exams and so on pressed down and locked them in. And so it's crucial that you do this before puberty. It's crucial that the children learn how to take their ideas and transform them into something useful before puberty. And they can do that through study skills and so on. And we can talk about that, and we talk about that in other podcasts. But in this podcast, we're focusing on that one idea of, what about their crazy ideas? What do we do with them? How do we prototype them? And so what happens at the end of this whole process is that the child starts germinating real ideas. They get past that first creative hurdle of the shitty first draft, and they go into the second draft, and it becomes something quite interesting. It might be an interesting story. It might be an interesting blog. It might be a design and an invention, whatever it is. And the important thing about why you would do this as a parent is that it feeds their confidence. It helps them realize that you see them as a person. The school system is designed in such a way as to make dyslexic children hide. They hide who they are, and who they are gets hidden from the teachers. The teachers only get a spark, a small insight when they talk to that child and hear what that child has to say. But when they look at the child's work, it doesn't match what they say. And they come to the conclusion that the child doesn't care about the subject, whereas maybe they do. But the more and more they hear this from the school system, that you don't care, that you're being lazy, the more and more they actually just shrug their shoulders and say, school isn't for me, learning isn't for me, I'm going to go and do something different. But if in that one area where they are really very good at getting ideas, they get nurtured and rapidly prototyped, it can make all the difference in preserving their self-confidence and being able to see that there is a creative process they can follow that produces useful stuff. And that can actually translate into becoming good at academics and school and things like that as well. So those are my thoughts for today. Let's go over to the parents and hear what you have to say and think. Thank you for joining me today.
I'm wondering about, so you said giving them the ability to use Minecraft to make it, so like cardboard or Lego or Minecraft, and those are just three of the ways that they can do it. So I kind of struggle with that kind of tension between how much screen time is too much, and especially if you're thinking from a Steiner perspective, screen time is lessened, which is helpful in a lot of ways. But I'm wondering, is Minecraft to a dyslexic person what AutoCAD is to an architect?
I think you've hit it on the nail, Ada. Minecraft is to a dyslexic person what AutoCAD is to an architect. But I have to say, I'm also a great advocate, and often architects are great advocates of mocking up a cardboard model before they go into CAD. You know? So cardboard models and so on. I mean, I would highly recommend you go to the physical prototyping first. If they're not willing to go physical and you don't have any other choices, because they might be older, you know, and the older your child gets into the teenage years, the harder it gets to actually persuade them to do things in a more ideal way for them. And I would say the ideal way is to get physical. Feel free to open up your mics and chip in, Deb.
I would agree with that with AutoCAD. I mean, I know how to do it, but my preferred method is to draw a floor plan or a building plan out, sketch it out, get it out. Because AutoCAD, it's such a procedure, and you're thinking about the procedure, and it doesn't do exactly what you want it to do every time. So, you know, the first draft, just get it out, sketch it out, and I just prefer pencil and paper.
And you're an architect, Deb?
No, that's a long story.
All right, okay.
That is my skill, but I went to a misogynistic university, so we'll talk about that.
Okay.
So you're architecturally inclined. That's the way your mind works and so on, yes. Now, one of the interesting things, Deb, when you're talking about AutoCAD, and this is actually happens when people use mind mapping software as well, or software in general for their ideas, often the software gets in the way of the flow of the idea. And this is a real problem for people with dyslexia, because if you imagine your brain is like a zero gravity workshop that I've described before, all your ideas are floating. It has the advantage that you can take heavy ideas, float them in your mind, move them around, and sort of keep things, you know, suspended in this zero gravity environment. But if you take your attention away from it, it starts to slowly spread out and float away. Okay, so the longer you keep your attention away from the idea, the more it starts to disintegrate, you know, gradually. And so this is one of the reasons why taking written notes is really hard for people with dyslexia when they're in the flow of an idea or when they're listening to information. Because as they're concentrating on the writing, they're no longer looking at the idea, and the idea is starting to float away. And so that's why it's so useful to have like a prototyping tool like mind mapping or visual organizing system or something like that, to just prototype your idea down quickly on a bit of paper. So instead of writing a sentence, you write down a key word, and it saves you that distraction from your idea. Okay. Now the same principle happens if you're in AutoCAD or some other bit of software. If you've got an idea and you're in the flow, and then the software gets in the way, you get distracted and you look back up your metaphorical idea and you realize, oh my goodness, it's gone. Or it started to break apart and you've lost track. And that's when you've got to guard your idea. You've got to keep your attention on it as much as possible. So that's actually when a paper and pen or something really easy to mock up doesn't get in the way of the flow of your idea. And probably why you feel that way, Deb.
Yeah, I would say that probably the most valuable class I ever took was that drafting class I had in high school. And it was, you know, the T-square and the triangle. And because I am dysgraphic and I'm just self-conscious about my drawing, that gave me the tools to draw as well as I wanted to, you know, or just taking that piece of graph paper and quickly counting out a foot. That's so much more useful to me than AutoCAD. But and then when I want to fine tune it, I'm trying to think of the bullet math that would be, that's when I go to AutoCAD. That's when I can be precise down to the fraction of an inch. And that's when I know it'll work. That's kind of what I'm working through. Will this work in real life. Is this realistic? That's where I use AutoCAD.
Yeah. Who else wants to share? Rebecca, you got anything to share or?
I'm just, I don't have anything really to share. I'm just finding this all so interesting. I'm like, I can't wait to look up your talk that you did and watch that. So I'm grateful for the sharing, I guess.
Thanks. And the fourth lady in the conversation. Oh, Skye, would you like to share anything?
Well, I've been looking at your concepts for a little while now, but I'm brand new. My kids just started trying your Doodle Club today because I truly believe the value in being left brain, right brain, and being able to nurture being able to listen and be able to take valuable notes. So I'm in the learning mode here, but I do see the value in it. And I do have a teenager that really needs to expand on this skill. And I truly believe it's going to be value to her through her life going forward.
Fantastic, Skye. Thanks for sharing that. Zeus, have we got any questions and comments from our Facebook participants?
We have a comment from Rach.
Okay, Rach.
My son started to prototype after I watched one of your videos. It was glorious to see him put his ideas on paper and hear an audible sign of relief from him. We now have a notebook in the center of our home just for his ideas and notes. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. So Rach just shared that she listened to some material that we released about prototyping, and she did it with her son and let her son do it. And when he was doing it, she heard an audible sigh of relief. And that's a wonderful thing to hear, because there is a release that happens when you get it out of yourself. And you've also got this notebook that you put in the middle of the room where he can put all his ideas as well. And that is fantastic as well. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for picking up that tip. And it is wonderful to start seeing children just having their ideas valued enough that you take the time to say, here's a special book for them, here's a time to do it, etc. And who knows, those ideas might come back and serve you and your family and humanity very well, because you look at all the inventions that there have been and you follow that trail. Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone in Scotland. He's dyslexic. Steve Jobs went on to develop the iPhone. He's dyslexic. Johnny Ives, the man he brought in to design the iPhone, the iPad, the MacBook Pro, he's a dyslexic Englishman. And if you look through Apple, I bet you a ton of them are dyslexic, and they probably don't know it. And that's just one segment. You just go through Stan Gloss, his inventions, and so on. You just go through the whole of society. What you'll start seeing is there's a reason why 10% of people are dyslexic. They're outliers, they're specialist thinkers, and their great ability is to pull together disparate areas of information and create innovative connections between them. And so what I reckon is, if you looked at a person who's got dyslexia and you think about it right now, maybe you might think you've got dyslexia, you might do if your child has, I bet you probably sit on the border of your specialty with another specialty. So let's say you're a really good archaeologist. Then you don't just sit directly in the middle of archaeology. You might look at the interplay of archaeology and maybe something scientific, maybe some scientific gizmo or something like that, that can scan the ground and so on, that oil rig people use for oil, but you can use it for archaeology. And then there's probably a third area of interest that you connect with. And what happens is there's a Venn diagram between these three areas, and you sit in the middle of that overlap. And I bet when you go and look at different people and you identify where they're sitting in terms of their positioning within a business or academics or study or wherever, they will often be in an area of overlap and often where three disciplines join. And they probably join because they pulled them together or someone like them pulled them together and created maybe even a new discipline. And so that's the gift dyslexia gives to society. So thank you very much for listening to this podcast, and we will be here again in the next podcast. I'm not sure what the next podcast will be, but look forward to seeing you there. If you want to know more about bullet mapping and mind mapping and organizing your ideas visually for dyslexia, we help children deal with reading comprehension, improving their note-taking, helping them remember things, helping them retell things and explain things, and helping them organize their ideas visually. All those five things which are essential for taking on life skills, for taking on schoolwork, and actually life and work in the future. We help them do all of that at Bullet Map Academy. So check us out at bulletmapacademy.com/workshop, and you'll see our next workshop there on these sorts of things. We do different workshops on, you know, organizing your ideas. We're just about to do one on how to get double the work done in a day. Help your child get double the work done in a day with dyslexia. I've got an organizing technique that takes an afternoon to teach parents how to do it, how to organize their day, how to organize their week with a bullet map and a planner and so on, how to do it visually. And boy, it works. And they end up doing more of their jobs in a day with less pestering from you as a parent. So we're gonna start that workshop in I think a couple of weeks time. So check that out under bulletmapacademy.com/workshop. See you later, guys. Bye.